Hey Spencer, how are we doing today?
Great, I'm talking to you.
Good answer. Good answer.
It's been a while since we chatted.
It has. It's been a little bit since we released an episode recently, but it was recorded quite a while ago. But yeah, excited to get back in a regular cadence again, I think, here. Maybe get some guests on the show as well, do some interviews. Yeah. So I'm excited to talk about friend and performance today with you. I think you've been doing some really interesting work around this, just understanding how Handshake's application is performing. And yeah, I'd love maybe if we could just start with kind of what's the motivation for us to, you know, to justify kind of the work you've been doing around understanding this, and why should people care about knowing how their site is performing?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two big ideas behind the motivation for starting to actually collect some of these metrics, or maybe I guess a few more than just two, but I think like two large themes come to mind. So the first is that sometimes people have said like, oh, Handshake feels slow, and it's kind of easy to say that. It's also kind of easy to dismiss it and say like, oh, it's probably just like your internet connection. There's probably something weird with it, or like might be one off. Or there's kind of a lot of things that you could say if you just get like qualitative feedback about it. So we wanted to actually get real numbers behind it and actually see what those numbers actually are, so that we could have a like quantitative discussion around it if necessary. And then the other thing is, we want to start kind of thinking about how our front end is architected, in the sense that as we might start moving towards these separate services based on teams, we want to be able to isolate the student front-end application from the like employer university front-end application. And the way it's all written today is very tightly coupled, and even tightly coupled to our back-end and Rails server. So there's a lot of big changes that would require. So we would want to be careful that we didn't introduce like a performance regression, so that we can monitor as we're making all these changes that we're at least not hurting performance. And if anything, a lot of these architectural changes should hopefully improve performance by kind of optimizing how our front end is built and bundled and things. So I think those were like the two big motivations, as well as we have a ton of metrics for all of our back end, all of our services, all of those aspects. And we have not a great idea today of what our front end looks like. So just making sure that we have a holistic, like full stack view of all of the different aspects of performance in our application.
Yeah, I think the way I've looked at measuring performance in the past is using things like, I think SiteSpeed.io is one that I've used, and Lighthouse from Google. Can you talk about why those didn't work for us?
Yeah, I started to look at a few of the like SiteSpeed.io or like a few other options like that. Google also publishes a bunch of performance data that you can like copy and start querying in BigQuery against a bunch of public sites. So there's a few sources like that. And I think a few of the obstacles I ran into with is that our entire application is authenticated. So there's very little, like very few pages open to the public. So there wasn't, it seemed like there wasn't a lot of information that we could gather from that. But, and then in terms of Lighthouse, that I think is an excellent tool and helps pinpoint a lot of the performance problems that you should look into. But that is a sample size of one. And I think I saw a few times it's kind of considered a lab experiment, in the sense that like you can run this in the lab and kind of see what you get, but that's not necessarily like exactly what users are experiencing. So it's kind of the comparison between like a lab experiment and the other term used is like real user metrics, or like actually collecting these metrics in the client's browsers that are actually browsing and using your site. And then as an aggregate, that should be much more representative of what the actual performance metrics for your site are.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So since we're not using any of those tools, you mind going into some of the specifics about what we're measuring and how we're doing that?
Yeah, I think we took a glance at a few products that kind of offered some level of front-end performance. And some of them we looked at were just like not up to what we were hoping or didn't offer enough granularity of what we're kind of hoping to look at and weren't super confident in what they could give us. I think there's some other options that might have actually been pretty useful and could have provided almost exactly what we were looking for. But the option we went with was to kind of implement it on our own using browser APIs. So this is obviously a little bit more work than using a like paid solution or some other option like that. But the advantage that it gives us is we can collect exactly what we want and we have complete control over it. And the other nice thing is that we can dump all these metrics into the same place that we have all of our other performance metrics for our backend services, so that it's all in one place and it just gives us a lot more flexibility. So we don't need to like kind of have these separate tools for different aspects.
So we're not pushing these directly to Datadog is what we use. You mind talking about that new application that you spun up just for front-end performance metric collection?
Yeah, I actually worked with, we have a internal platform team that works on a lot of the like infrastructure layer, like load balancers, Kubernetes, like all of those aspects that all of the teams need to work on. And they also kind of help with some of these kind of one-off services. So I actually worked with somebody on that team. And it's a very lightweight Go service that essentially takes and consumes these metrics and then just forwards them to Datadog. That's about the extent of knowledge I have on that because I have no familiarity with like Go or the internal details of how Datadog works. But that's kind of at a high level how it kind of works.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You mind going into some of the specifics about which metrics we're tracking and why we care about them?
Yeah, before kind of diving into a lot of these metrics, I hadn't really looked at them very in depth at all before, or really at all. So a lot of this was a kind of learning experience for me to kind of understand what a lot of the options are and then understand like how to actually collect and measure those. And I think the single source that was probably the most useful was like the Google Web Fundamentals. And they have like excellent guides that include videos as well as like code snippets, but then like fantastic descriptions of what these actually were. And I think probably without this, it would have taken me like significantly longer to understand what the options are and probably came up with like some inferior solution to what we actually have today. So that was instrumental in understanding a lot of these metrics. But it's kind of what I relied on to at least get the initial ideas of what metrics we should actually care about. And I think the two core metrics that are probably the most important, or at least that we're measuring right now, are first paint and time to interactive. So they kind of provide some like questions you can ask for what these metrics measure. So I think that kind of helps frame it a little bit better or like understand what these metrics are actually collecting. So for first paint, it answers the question for your user, like, is it happening? And this is the first time something changes in the browser that signifies that you're like transitioning to a new page after navigation. And then there's first contentful paint, which means some meaningful element has rendered. And then sometimes you can also measure first meaningful paint, which is the first time a like hero element renders or a video renders or like some important content that the user can start to like read or consume. We're not measuring first meaningful paint today, but we do have first paint and first contentful paint, and those are implemented as performance metrics in some browsers. So all of the Chromium browsers support this. So Chrome, Opera, I think it's like Samsung Internet and a few other mobile browsers support collecting first paint directly from the browser, and it gives you these numbers directly, so we can rely on that browser API. We're not currently collecting it. We don't currently have a fallback if the browser doesn't support this, so we might consider that in the future to make sure that we're getting a holistic view of all browsers and all users. But for the time being, this was the easiest way to implement it, to start getting some numbers around it. We can look at like optimizing that in the future. And then I think the other one was time to interactive, and this one is a little bit more complicated. So the idea is that the question that this answers is it usable for the user? So can the user actually like interact with the page? So even though you might be able to see and read content, you can't necessarily start interacting with the page. And this doesn't have necessarily have a like direct browser API. It doesn't have like a super strict formula for exactly what is measuring from my understanding, but we're using a polyfill for this. So the way that I understand that polyfill kind of works is it's checking for long-running tasks, and a long-running task is anything over 50 milliseconds. And then it's checking for the first time after a long-running task that the browser hasn't had one for 5 seconds, if that makes sense. So it'll like backdate it to the beginning of that 5 second window, but we have to wait 5 seconds to determine when time to interactive was. So that's kind of my understanding of how that works. And we're also collecting time to first byte, and that's the request round trip from the server and the response back. So that number, from a front end perspective, we have absolute no control over. The only way we can modify or improve that metric is by improving our server response times and making the time on the server smaller, but that includes like network latency and everything else that is in between the client and the server that we don't have control over. And I think the last big one is first input delay. So this is kind of a newer-ish metric, and it kind of goes hand in hand with time to interactive, or they like go together kind of well. So this is the idea that whenever a user clicks, how long does it take for us to respond to that input? So that is kind of, that's kind of an interesting metric in comparison to the other ones, because the other ones we could just run and the user does not have to interact with the page at all, and we can collect those. And the user doesn't necessarily like feel that pain, although like the pain of it loading. But with first input delay, you could say that this is the actual metric that measures the user's like pain of interaction if it's really long, because they actually are trying to interact with the page and this is how long it's taking to happen. So I think those are kind of an overview of the biggest metrics, or the core metrics that we're measuring.
Nice. And what do you see as the biggest opportunity, or maybe what's the biggest problem that you see it highlighting for us?
Yeah, I think these numbers kind of now validate a lot of what we've kind of heard, or we kind of were assuming, but now we have an actual number on it, in that the performance needs to be improved. And I think all of these numbers are a little higher than we would like. So I think now it's kind of looking at how can we actually improve these, which was one of the main goals of collecting these, is understanding what they are and understanding what we kind of want to do with them. And I think right now, at least, the biggest opportunity seems to be code splitting. So right now we're shipping a single bundle with all of our front end, and this is obviously not ideal. And Webpack has great support for code splitting. And now React has pretty good support for code splitting components using suspense. And then you can kind of show a loading fallback until that component has loaded. So there's a lot of great tooling, but we weren't able to leverage it up to this point, because when we first started, we're relying on Webpack to build all of these assets, and then it's pushing it through the Rails asset pipeline. And this was ideal for getting started and kind of iterating quickly, but we've never taken the time to go back and actually kind of decouple those and give Webpack the full control. And once we're able to do that, then we can leverage Webpack to do things like code splitting or explore other things like tree shaking and trying to optimize your bundle further than we are able to do currently today.
One thing that is unique to our app, I guess maybe not that unique, but we use Turbo Links, but I guess the story is very similar for single page applications. But there's the initial page load, which is what we are currently measuring. But then subsequent requests are a little different from the end user perspective. You know, we're not reinterpreting the entire bundle unless, you know, there's been a deploy or something that has changed the contents of that file. Do you want to talk about, you know, what should people be thinking about if they have that set up?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I think that's something we'll probably have to look into as we continue working on this. This is kind of a first pass in giving us at least some numbers in the sense of what is the experience for users that are landing on Handshake for the first time, or at least the first time since a deploy, which we now deploy quite frequently, I think 20, 30 times a day. So in many of those deploys, we're creating a new front-end bundle, so that's not cached any longer, so users have to re-download that. The browser has to parse that and then compile it. So there's a lot of time spent in that. But like you said, once you've kind of loaded that and then navigating to other pages, we rely on TurboLinks to kind of streamline that a little bit, which also it inherently introduces some complexities. But I think, like you were saying, a lot of some of these metrics could be useful to also collect on page change. And as we start to think about a like single page app doing client side routing, we would also probably want to start to measure some of these. But I haven't dug into that too much, and I'm sure there's some great resources around how to kind of think about these metrics on subsequent page transitions in single page apps or other pieces. I don't know, did you have any thoughts on this? I'm sure you've thought about this just as much as I have.
Definitely not as much as you, but I guess my initial reaction is that, you know, it's probably, it depends on your use case. So, I mean, for us, like you mentioned, we're deploying many times a day. So the cache is being busted, you know, probably multiple times per hour. So there's going to be full page reloads. You know, if for people actively using the app, there's a good chance you're going to have a full page reload. So you're clicking through the app, and then all of a sudden, one request takes, you know, a few seconds, but it's been felt a little bit more snappy up until that. So I guess it's just like what's an acceptable like user experience. But I could definitely see for some applications that say you maybe only have like a weekly deploy schedule or even once a day, I could see being, you know, just if you're just caching that bundle, maybe you don't need to worry about it as much. You know, optimizing for initial load time isn't as big of an issue. But yeah, I think for us, enabling continuous deployments and like having like knowing that the cache is being busted so often, I think it is a big issue for us.
Yeah, I think we could probably alleviate a lot of that problem once we are able to do code splitting, because then kind of the worst case is that we're just busting cache for a much smaller piece of code that you may not even ever have to load. So that might help a little bit in that case, because today it is, like you were explaining, if one thing changes in that, you have to re-download the entire bundle, which is definitely not ideal. And the other thing I think that you were touching on is that TurboLinks, at least from my understanding, if anything in the head changes, which includes the links to our scripts, then it's going to do a hard page reload. But as we think about a single page app, we could consider not re-implementing that. And then instead, after like a day or 2 days or something, if there is new assets, then kind of prompting the user to do it, or just doing it ourselves, but maybe giving users a little bit longer time frame to continue using that old code. But that could also introduce new complexities that we don't have to worry about today.
Right, definitely. Yeah, it'd be interesting, like you said, to start collecting some of that information just to understand, you know, the story on the initial page load is pretty rough, but what does it really mean for, you know, the how many requests are happening that are, I guess, full page reload? You know, it might give us a little bit different insight into just how bad the user experience might be.
Yeah, I think those are all great points and important to keep in mind and start to think about as we continue looking into some of this stuff and how like subsequent page transitions and the metrics around those. And they're probably significantly better than first page load due to the way that we're doing things today. But we also have a lot of those issues like you outlined with deploys and busting the cache with that.
Yeah, it is great now that we do have a baseline so we can actually measure the improvements of some of these changes we're making, as opposed to, like you said, you know, running a lighthouse test here and there. And as with all things performance related, I think it's just a great practice to get a baseline first and then work to improve that, rather than just kind of jumping into trying to optimize things without having kind of all the information about how things are changing.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Well, anything else you wanted to cover around front-end metrics today?
No, I think that was about it. I don't know. Did you have any other thoughts around it?
No, nothing here. Just excited for some of the work ahead to improve them.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to working on some of those things and then sharing some of those approaches that we use to improve some of these metrics.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to give people a little glimpse of what's ahead. So first, we just wanted to measure performance. Next thing, the focus is going to be decoupling from the asset pipeline. So that will enable us to do things with like code splitting, lazy loading, and even running some of the assets like images and things that we have been pushing through all through the asset pipeline up until this point through Webpack and potentially some new capabilities there. Then we'll be probably looking at client-side routing and finally looking at changing the way we kind of manage data on the front end using GraphQL and some new tooling available there.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's all for this week. So show notes for this episode can be found at rubberducking.fm/15.
As always, we'd love to hear from you. Hit us up, hosts@rubberducking.fm, with any feedback or thoughts about today's show. Thanks for listening.